Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the next hour. Thank you for listening in. During this hour, we'll hear about Iowa legislation passed last April authorizing the use of medical marijuana with the goal of providing help for patients with cancer, post-traumatic stress disorder, and numerous other ailments. FLAG, a local advocacy group, will be presenting a movie that challenges stereotypes about gender roles called The Gender Revolution in collaboration with National Geographic, and we'll hear about that. Susan Guiazda, public relations officer for the City of Ames, will be offering her monthly municipal update in the last half of this hour. And the Mid-Iowa Woodcarvers return for their one-day show at Ryman Gardens tomorrow, May 6th. Guests will have the opportunity to view carving contest entries, watch carving demonstrations, and also get hands-on lessons in whittling if they'd like to learn a little bit about wood carving. Recently at Northcrest, I met with Art Mann, and he told me about it. He's a wood carver, and here's Art.
We've had this show going on for about 7 years now. This is actually a show that comes from a group of wood carvers out of Des Moines, Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers. It's a great group of people. When we started looking for a venue to have the show, Ryman Gardens opened their arms to us, basically, and said, come on down. So anybody that's interested can come down this coming Saturday, and for the price of coming to Ryman Gardens, you get to enter the wood carving show.
What's happening at the show?
We will have the big room out there next to the conservatory, and we will have carvings which are there for prize money, and we'll also have a couple of tables that people are just bringing carvings for display. If you are a wood carver that's not aware of the show and want to bring something to be judged, just show up between 8 and 9, and it goes basically from 9 until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We also will have the opportunity to have a sack lunch. Come and enjoy the day, all day, including the lunch. We'll also have some mini classes where anybody that wants to come and try it can, with supervision, carve little projects. And we've got an excellent person that has done a lot of work with some of the wood carving magazines, and he'll be teaching some of the mini classes, and a few other people will be also, and would have tools to borrow. There's something that you can do within several hours. And I can remember one gal was really pleased because she carved a little tiny gnome.
Oh, wow.
A miniature gnome, and that was a lot of fun. A lot of people don't know this, but gnomes are plentiful more often than not in Europe. They're about 6 inches tall. They wear a cap that's a pointed, we would call it a dunce cap, but it's just part of their dress, and they're fun little creatures. They're kind of ornery, and most wood carvers are ornery with a sense of humor and that type of thing, so it's a good fit. But there is a gnome that stands guard during the daytime, the world's largest concrete gnome, and our group did the sign there that's right next to it. And he's on the post during the day, and he looks like he's made out of wood. But he stands behind the sign, and he roams around at night to protect the place and such. But during the day, he stands still as a post right behind the sign.
Have you seen the gnome?
This gnome came to life after I carved it. So it's on the back of the sign that says this is the world's largest concrete gnome. But gnomes aren't the only things we carve.
So at the show, there's going to be classes where you can learn how to do some carving.
Correct.
There'll be demonstrations of carving.
Correct.
And then also you'll be able to see the carvings that have been submitted by the wood carvers that are competitive carving. Is that correct?
That is correct. And like I said, it's Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers based out of Des Moines. Mm-hmm. But it's common to have people from Cedar Rapids, Newton, Waterloo. And, well, in fact, one fellow comes up from Kansas City every year.
Wow. You're a wood carver. What kind of wood do you use?
Primarily, basswood is used if you're going to paint the wood. It's a nice soft wood without a lot of grain. And I've done some things in butternut and some things in cherry. I did a carving out of catalpa wood that won Best of Show at the State Fair quite a few years ago. Walnut's used sometimes because it's just such a beautiful wood, but yeah, it's a hard wood.
How long have you been carving wood?
I've had 17 good years of a lot of fun and enjoyment and camaraderie. Good people. We have a lot of fun. You take a lot of ribbing. Anybody that wood carves has a good sense of humor, and that's primarily what I tried to do with my wood carving, is take something that may seem ordinary but add some humor to it. One of my most recent ones was a wood carving of a caveman. And he's kind of a slender fella. We always think of the brawn of the caveman, but that's not why they survive. They survive because of their brain. And you can see that he's just had another new idea. That will be on the table. That's one I've had a lot of fun with. It's an excellent hobby in that if you've got 5 minutes sometime and the spirit moves you, you can go ahead and start a carving or continue on one. If you've got 3 hours, you can spend it and not even realize you've spent any time doing it. But come in and take a look at what people have done. And like I say, if you want to get started, we'd be happy to have you join our club. It's Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers.
And the Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers has a Facebook page.
They do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining me. That was Art Mann talking about his craft and reminding you that the Mid-Iowa Woodcarvers Show is coming to Ryman Gardens tomorrow, May 6th, and the doors open at 9 a.m. The 2017 legislative session ended early in the morning of April 22nd. Branstad has 1 month to sign those bills into law. And there is still room to speculate about whether outgoing Governor Terry Branstad will or won't sign the bills or line item veto the budget provisions that were passed 2 weeks ago. One of the last things the Iowa legislature did before adjourning for the year was to pass a bill that expands the state's limited medical cannabis program. Until now, under the laws enacted in 2014, Iowans have been allowed cannabis oil for the treatment of epilepsy. However, the law is slated to expire, and it has remained illegal to manufacture or distribute oil in the state. Since federal law prohibits its transportation across state lines, obtaining cannabis oil has remained essentially illegal in Iowa. The law that was passed allows marijuana to be grown in Iowa and dispensed as an oil to seriously ill patients. Jason Karimi is an advocate for the legalization of medical marijuana and has been in Des Moines throughout the legislative process and negotiations. According to him, details and clarifications remain to be ironed out. He spoke with KHOI reporter Greta Anderson about this.
Ames resident Jason Karimi is the director of Iowa Patients for Medical Marijuana, working really hard on the issue. I spoke with Jason a couple weeks ago. At that time, Jason, you told me that the medical marijuana bill passed in Iowa in 2014 was perhaps the nation's worst medical marijuana law and wasn't even considered a medical marijuana law by some because it was so limited to epilepsy and also because there was no way to legally procure the marijuana that might be used to treat such patients. Second, there was the issue of the expiration of this provision in July 1st of this year. So where do we stand now, Jason, after the 2017 legislative session has ended?
The House just passed a bill out of the House over to the Senate. They ignored the Senate's more comprehensive bill, which was going to actually help Iowans, and wrote their own bill that they wouldn't let anyone see, and they kept very secret and private until about 5 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning.
It was about half an hour before the session ended.
Yeah, they ended at 7:16 a.m. with a vote on medical cannabis, and then they adjourned for the session.
So this was the very last bill.
That's how they did it in 2014 as well. It's a very uncomfortable issue, and rather than do the legal research required to do this properly, they tend to throw a not complete bill on the table and then say we did something within 24 hours of passing it. They have already said they're going to have to fix it next year. That's how bad this bill is. So the House GOP and the Senate Republican leadership have both committed to taking this issue head on, whether in the interim or in next session. Remains to be seen.
Was this bill simply focused on epilepsy patients?
No, this one's a little more comprehensive. They removed some of the illnesses that the Senate bill had had that we passed 2 weeks ago, but it has a few more illnesses. Most of them are terminal. I don't believe it includes chronic pain. It also does not include PTSD, which a lot of veterans and military members around the state were very unhappy about.
What exactly does this bill that was passed say?
What they're telling us it means and what it actually means is still being found out this week. So as soon as they passed it, on Monday, our various representatives were telling us that it complies with federal law. Tuesday, they said it doesn't. On Monday, they said the Medical Advisory Board can fix this law. Tuesday, they said it can't. So we're trying to get clarification right now because the bill was written so vaguely and poorly that it seems the representatives who voted on it don't actually understand what it entails. We do know it does not comply with federal law, and that's my complaint. And we've been very vocal and very much on record about it. We want a bill that complies with federal law, and we know how to do it here in Iowa, unlike the other states. And we're actually ahead of the country on that. That's what we talked about on the last radio show.
And that has to do with
scheduling.
Schedule 1 versus Schedule 2.
Yes. And the interesting thing is the Senate bill fixed that, and in their very first paragraph said this complies with federal law, and it's going to remove Schedule 1. The House completely took that language out, and we don't know why.
Oh. Tell me about your experience as a lobbyist for this issue. You've been very active and very dedicated.
I spent 8 hours watching the Senate when they passed their bill. We had submitted an amendment to ask them to clarify that it complies with federal law, and the Senate actually said it's too late in the day because we're going to have to go back to our drawing board and look into this amendment and make sure it's good before we put it in, so we're just going to table it for right now and consider it later. Then we put the same amendment into the House members. They completely ignored it, but I did get a chance to speak with Chloe Bodler personally one-on-one with another lady standing there, and he told me he would review the amendment and let me know.
Who again?
Chloe Bodler. He's the state trooper.
So Chloe Barber used to be state trooper. Now he's a representative?
Representative, yes. And he sits he's the chair of the Public Safety Committee in the House. So he's used his power to stifle dissent and keep people away from talking about this issue, coming at it from a fear-based perspective instead of a knowledgeable one.
This legislative session ended early in the morning on Saturday. Were you there through the night?
Yeah, I was there. I got there at about 10:30 after work, and I sat up in the balcony. I ended up, by the end of the night, I'd been taken down onto the House floor. The representatives are very nice. We were working together. They're used to activists who show up from this issue, who yell, who smell like marijuana, who talk about smoking marijuana, and I'm none of those things. So I don't smoke marijuana, and so it makes me able to talk to them without that criminal element included in the situation. So while I do represent people who are potentially breaking the law, I'm able to speak more open than them, and I actually know what I'm talking about. So it's been an educational battle that has been stifled because prior activists caused a lot of problems. So the stereotypes that exist at the Capitol are there for a good reason, and it's been a huge battle to talk on a peer-to-peer level with these guys.
Okay, but it does sound like you have the ears of both Democratic and Republican legislators, which is, in this particular session, rather unusual.
Yeah, this is the only issue that's brought everyone together. It's the only bipartisan issue everyone seems to agree on. We had a 45-5 vote in favor of it in the Senate and an 83-11 in the House. That's a tremendous margin. And now it's on the governor's desk. We don't see that on any other issue other than medical cannabis.
The only that it remains to be seen exactly what this law means.
Yes, it is going to help people. People are very unhappy with it. But what we do know is we have a year and a half before this program even becomes accessible to Iowans. So we have that year and a half to fix these problems. One of the main ones is the 3% THC. They limited the amount of THC available in the oil to 3%, which takes out everyone with pain everyone with serious illnesses, anyone with cancer who wants to see or go get research as to whether or not high THC oil can actually kill cancerous tumors. There's been science showing that, and there hasn't been research done into it to be able to prove it yet, but that's one of the reasons we're advocating for 100% THC oil. Senator Bolcom actually called this baby aspirin, and that's essentially what we passed. And while it's a step forward, baby aspirin isn't going to save lives.
So it's not just a matter of immediate use. It's a matter of patients wanting to be included in trials of more intensive marijuana therapy, not just pain, but also treatment.
Treatment, yes, yes.
And you don't think it's going to stand because?
Because it doesn't make any sense. To limit it to such a low level is going to have doctors and patients up in arms. So if you're going to say this is medicine, you can't say only part of it is medicine. You don't going to limit what's medicine, what's not, because it's the political agenda to pretend that this is not a legitimate issue. The opponents of medical cannabis do not want this to be based on facts and science. They want this to be based on emotion, so they can claim it's nothing but an emotional issue. And they have ignored the facts and science for the past 7 years. 7 years ago, our own Iowa Board of Pharmacy, who was already in the legal system to specifically advise on issues such as this, they said you need to pass this because it's legitimate medicine after reviewing 30,000 pages of scientific documentation. That was ignored by the legislature in 2011, and it was ignored by the legislature in 2017.
Jason Karimi, the director of Iowa Patients for Medical Marijuana. Thank you so much, Jason.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks to Greta Anderson and Jason Karimi for that report about the legalization of medical cannabis oil for medical treatment, legislation that is a work in progress here in Iowa. On Tuesday, May 9th, a film called Gender Revolution, A Journey with Katie Couric, will be shown at the Collegiate Wesleyan Annex at 130 South Sheldon Avenue in Ames, with optional discussion to follow. This film is going to be sponsored by PFLAG of Ames in cooperation with National Geographic Films. KHOI reporter Kay Puttock discussed the film with Cindy Blythe, the president of PFLAG in Ames. Cindy started out with a brief description of exactly what PFLAG is.
PFLAG started in 1972 in New York by a single woman, and her name was Jean Manford. She had a gay son who had been brutally attacked in New York because of his sexual orientation, and she felt so strongly about that that she chose to create this handmade sign. It says, "Parents of Gays Unite in Support of Our Children," and she said, "I love my son." And that was the beginning of PFLAG as a movement in this country. It is one of the largest grassroots movements or organizations in support of lesbian, gay, transgender, and really all marginalized demographic populations in our country, particularly around sexual orientation and gender identity. But PFLAG is trying to rebrand itself as simply PFLAG. We don't want
And you don't worry about what it stands.
We don't want to be seen as only lesbians and gays, because the spectrum of gender identity and gender orientation is extremely broad, and PFLAG wants to be inclusive of all of that.
I see.
Transgender and gender questioning and other sort of fringe, possibly less known way people identify. And so that was the idea behind the rebranding.
Are straight people welcome at PFLAG?
Absolutely. You know, really, PFLAG is a community group, and we just get together to support each other. We do advocacy. We do education. We do whatever we see that needs to be done. PFLAG is a grassroots organization that is organized around support, advocacy, and education, and all are welcome. In fact, several of the people who come to the Ames group are simply there to be supportive. And we have a word for those people. It's ally. So really, allies are a very, very important part of what PFLAG does.
This brings us to the subject of the film, which is going to be shown this coming Tuesday, May the 9th.
Yes.
At the Collegiate Wesley Annex, which is on Sheldon Avenue, 130 South Sheldon. And this will be from 6 to 8. This is a film. called Gender Revolution, A Journey with Katie Couric, sponsored by PFLAG of Ames, in cooperation with National Geographic Documentary Films. So it should be a very interesting film.
Yes. The senior editor actually is a woman. She is the first woman senior editor of National Geographic ever. And she felt like gender issues are coming into a day when we need to understand them. And I think she's right. And National Geographic wanted to be on the forefront of this. And so they had an issue of their magazine. The January of 2017 issue is devoted to this topic. Features a picture on the cover of a transgender child. They did this companion hour-long documentary with Katie Couric to go along with it. Katie Couric, of course, is wonderful. It was aired on television, and then they released it to organizations like PFLAG free of charge. They provided the movie, they provided educational materials and support to get it out in the community because they felt that it was this important. The film is a wonderful explanation of gender and gender identity and what all these words mean, and it introduces you to real people who are living real lives and kind of exposes you to their difficulties and problems and joys and overcomings. There will be an optional discussion following the movie to talk about some of the issues that it raises. I will be emceeing that discussion. We'll take it wherever it needs to go. If there's people there who have questions or stories to share, you know, we'll certainly do that. I think that the young people these days are more flexible in their thinking, and so they just kind of take it in stride. For some of us that are a little bit older, our world seems to be changing to people for whom it's a completely new concept. It is rather bewildering. And so, you know, the real issue at stake here is more than just understanding. It's more than just, hey, everybody, let's know what all this means. There are real people suffering real harm because of the misunderstandings surrounding gender identity and even still today, sexual orientation and preferences. There are people, particularly young people, who are dying.
Right.
And even one of these deaths is too many. So those of us who are sort of in the trenches feel like we're fighting a battle to save lives. A recent Pew Research report released recently by the National Center for Transgender Equality paints a disheartening picture of the treatment of transgender people. And here's the statistic. 1 in 10 trans individuals experienced physical violence at the hands of a family member. And even higher numbers left school to avoid mistreatment. Mm-hmm. That's the tip of the iceberg on the very, very disturbing statistics around transgender.
Right.
They are more likely to be homeless. They're more likely to be destitute economically. They're more likely not to seek health care. And they're more likely to receive what we would consider substandard treatment in a health care setting. And I believe the number is currently 38 states in the country. It is legal to be fired simply because you're transgender. Not only that, it is legal to be denied a hotel room, a rental car, access to an airport. Any public facility can deny access simply because they're transgender. There is a lot of work to do in this country to give people just common decency and rights.
Where does Iowa stand in this?
You know, Iowa is a really wonderful place in so many ways. In fact, in 2009, Iowa became only the third state in the country to legalize same-sex marriage. That's pretty forward-thinking for somebody that's in the flyover zone. Everybody's aware there was repercussions. Judges lost their jobs. There's been a lot of pushback from the conservative sections of the state, but it did happen. Not only that, but Iowa has one of the most inclusive and broad spectrum of equality laws that's out there. The Iowa statute for the equal rights in Iowa includes language that specifically names sexual orientation, gender identity, and several other categories of minority and often discriminated against people. Iowa does not allow discrimination based on any of those things in employment or in public accommodation or housing. And, you know, that law has been on the books for years. It is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Our current political climate unfortunately has a lot of very dedicated people on the other side of the aisle trying to repeal those equal rights that were afforded to the LGBTQ community. And organizations like One Iowa, which is the largest LGBTQ organization in Iowa, are fighting every day. They employ a full-time staff member whose job it is simply to watch the legislature and notify people when something gets tucked on the back page of a bill. So there's always a fight. It's an important fight to have, and mm-hmm. people's lives depend on it. Many people in Iowa are familiar with Matthew Shepard.
Right,
Matthew Shepard
right.
was a young man who was brutally murdered in, I believe, Wyoming.
And tortured, you could say.
Yes,
actually.
Yes. And there is a scholarship offered every year in Iowa under his name and other efforts using his sort of publicity to serve the community of LGBT people. And there are many, many people whose names are never known, whose stories are never known, that quietly take their life in a corner or are badly abused and go into a closet. You know, I personally identify as a lesbian. I am mm-hmm. married to a wonderful woman, and I'm so happy that I can do that. And I can do it freely, and I can say it on the radio mm-hmm. and not fear retribution.
Right.
Coming out of that closet is such a life giver. But I spent 40 years in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a place no one wants to be. It's a solitary confinement that no one else can see. It leaves scars and emotional damage that is often very, very difficult to overcome and maybe sometimes even impossible. I think that a lot of times when people have these negative reactions, these murderous reactions possibly, it's out of fear. And in PFLAG and in all of my life and the organizations and circles that I travel in, you know, I really want to help to say, there's nothing to fear, really. I'm not scary. My wife isn't scary. But there are people who can't be so easily closeted, and transgenders are among them because they do look funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look like men masquerading as women or women masquerading as men. And our brains are so programmed to see that gender. And the truth of it is that we're not born knowing the difference between boys and girls and men and women and how they should behave and how they should look. Gender is a societal construct.
Right.
In fact, one of the points that the Gender Revolution movie makes is that gender is defined by the World Health Organization as a set of socially constructed characteristics.
Right.
So we can change. But it's hard to teach an old dog a new trick. And I still make mistakes. We all do. But the point is that I never do it meanly. And that you don't have to be mean and you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be best buddies. But kindness.
Human decency.
Just human decency. You know, and I really understand that there are people who are afraid and there are people who are not informed. And I think that that's what National Geographic was really going for when they put out this magazine and they made this movie and they put what is obviously a huge amount of money and effort into this publicity, because they want to be part of the solution and say, here, let me help you understand. It does do a great job of presenting the science in a clear and understandable way that is not emotional and is not intended to raise anybody's political hackles. It is simply, here is how this actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a game changer for a person's attitude.
Tuesday, May the 9th, from 6 to 8 at Collegiate Wesley Annex, which is 130 South Sheldon Avenue in Ames.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy Blythe.
And thank you, Kay Puttock, for that report. PFLAG Ames meets regularly every second Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m. in the Paul Room of the YSS building in Ames at 420 Kellogg. They can also be reached at pflagames@yahoo.com, and that is spelled just the way it sounds, pflagames@yahoo.com.
Sometimes it takes a rainy day just changed. You got to spill some over, spill some over, spill some over, over us. Filling up and spilling over, it's an endless waterfall. Filling up and spilling over, over us. Filling up and spilling over, it's an endless waterfall. Filling up and spilling over, over us. Like the rain like a rain falling all around.
And this is Local Talk. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, has joined us. Also, Mark Ganson is here. Mark is Civil Engineer 1. And Mark, why don't you start off by telling us what's going on with streets in Ames?
Probably the biggest impact to everyone starting next week will be improvements to South Duff Avenue down by the South Walmart. So what we're doing there is installing a median along the center left turn lane to eliminate some of the unsafe left turn lanes in the area, along with the signal. The signal will be lined up with the south side of the Walmart parking lot, along with the entrance to South Point Center down there. So, you know, the entrance to Hoo Hot and Firehouse Subs and some of those other local businesses down there to provide a little better access. So the thing that's going to be starting first will be the center median. So in order to get that accomplished, we need to close the center lane and then the inside lanes both directions. So traffic will be necked down to one lane in each direction through there, and that's going to take about 3 weeks. So hopefully we can get a nice stretch of weather like we've had recently and can get that done on schedule. Once we complete the median down there, then we will do some more improvements to make sure all the entrances and everything get lined up and some of the other work outside of there.
So expect a little bit slower traffic on South Duff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can find a different route, might be a good plan here for a couple of weeks. You know, hopefully with school being out, traffic will be reduced quite a bit. That's why we've kind of selected this time frame. But yes, I mean, expect delays probably while you're in the area.
Probably a good idea to take 13th Street out to the freeway.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's always a good route to go. So some of the other work that's going on, 2700 Lincoln Way, we have a development project going on out there in between Sheldon and Highland.
Mm-hmm. The big hole?
The big hole, yes. Mm-hmm. So they've been working on that for a little bit.
Where my junior high school used to be.
Yes. Yes, it's the area is certainly changing. The work is finally going to extend a little farther north, which is going to require a closure on the south lane of Lincoln Way. So what's going to happen starting next week is that we're going to convert Lincoln Way down to a three-lane section in the area with the farthest south lane closed. So the traffic control will stretch from west of Highland to east of Sheldon. Temporary traffic signals will be used to try and accommodate the intersections as best as possible. We'll be watching those closely and adjusting the timing as best as we can to keep everything flowing as well as possible. Once we start next week, we're anticipating approximately 18 months.
Wow, that's a major project.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a very major project.
There's work being done under the street?
There's not much being done under the streets. There's some utility connections that are required, the shared use path and everything in the area just due to safety requirements. So, yeah, it will be a very major project, and, you know, we certainly look forward to having that done. And I guess while I'm on the topic of Lincoln Way, I just wanted to mention that we will be doing a little bit of manhole repair in the Cyride stop at Beach and Lincoln Way on the north side there. It shouldn't be of much impact to anyone. Mm-hmm. I believe that's starting this week. But just wanted to mention that, as, you know, a lot of people will be seeing that as they drive by. So hopefully it doesn't hold you up. And then finally, the last project that we have going on that's a pretty big impact to traffic is South 3rd, South 4th Street. So that continues to be moving along pretty well. We are still on pace to have the west side of Grand Avenue completed and open by the end of the month. We're coming up on probably flipping the traffic. So right now we have traffic driving down the south, two lanes on South 3rd, South 4th Street. I guess it'd be South 4th Street on the west side of Grand. We're working on getting some new asphalt in on the north side there. Once we have that complete, we will close the south two lanes, have people drive down the north two lanes, and provide temporary cross access through the construction in those south lanes as best as possible.
Yep. So still blocked.
Yep, yeah. It'll still be closed by the bridge.
I myself got myself right into a corner. I was in a hurry and I thought, I'll just go down the back way and yeah, it's definitely blocked off.
It certainly happens. So with graduation this week, we've worked with Iowa State to get some variable message boards in some strategic locations on South 4th Street and South 16th Street to try and, you know, get the word out as best as we can so we don't have people, you know, doing just that basically and getting into tight spots with the construction. So hopefully everything goes well. We're certainly going to have a lot of people in town, so I'm sure some delays with everything on South 16th Street and Lincoln Way, but hopefully it goes as well as possible. So,
okay, thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then once we complete the work on the west side of Grand Avenue, we will flip sides to the east side of Grand Avenue. That will stretch basically from Grand Avenue over to South Duff. We'll have one portion between Grand Ave and South Walnut. Mm. That will be a full reconstruction. So that will require full closure like what we have on the west side, which also means that access to the south side of Lincoln Center at the signal won't be allowed during that construction work. Fortunately, we have a couple of other accesses to the center, so I guess hopefully everyone can keep that in mind as they make their way in that part of town. And then we'll be keeping basically two lanes open from Walnut over to Duff to, you know, keep access to all the businesses along there and the homes. We'll certainly provide some more notice and press releases as that time comes. Other small projects going on in kind of the residential parts of town on just some local streets, but shouldn't really be a big impact to people's drives, hopefully.
And also, we just want to remind people to get regular updates on construction projects. Please go to our website at cityofames.org/construction because our engineers do a great job of keeping that updated with just details of the projects and timelines. Sometimes there's maps on there. It's a helpful tool to check on a project status.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mark Anson, Civil Engineer 1. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. So what's going on in the
So much going on. I tried to organize my thoughts chronologically so I wouldn't miss anything. We do have a speaker coming up on Monday, May 8th. The Historic Preservation Commission does an educational series at different times, and they have an architect coming in who's spoken with us before, Steve Wilkie Shapiro, an architect with Slingshot Architecture in Des Moines. We'll talk about using historic tax credits. So if that's something of interest to you, if you live in an old home or specifically business owners, small business owners who are interested in using this state program for historic tax credit, mark your calendar for 7 p.m. on Monday, May 8th.
So historic tax credit is tax credit for a historic building. Is that what it means?
Well, I think Steve will talk to us about it. It's a 25% state tax credit that would possibly apply to windows, siding, storefronts, roof repair, porches, foundations, plumbing, electric. Mm-hmm. There's a whole list of things. Mm-hmm. An incentive to keep up those homes and businesses. A good question. How would you know your property is applicable? I don't know. Mm-hmm. This might be a good way to find out. 7 p.m. Monday, May 8th in the council chambers in City Hall. So that one's coming up real soon. We also have a public input meeting. Ames Parks and Recreation, as you know, is moving forward on an all-inclusive playground in Miracle League Field. They're looking at putting that in at Inez Grove. So a lot of information available about that. 6 to 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, May 11th at the Ames Public Library in the Farwell T. Brown Auditorium. The City of Ames is working with Snyder & Associates to develop plans and specs for a Miracle League Field and all-inclusive playground at Inez Grove. And as part of this public input session, they're going to get input on a park master plan, sort of looking at the park comprehensively. And that's a really nice, larger community park in North Ames. And it's gone through transition. There's nice tennis courts up there. We just put in some sand volleyball courts up there. There's some great shelters. Really a nice amenity for that part of town and draws from all over the city.
And where exactly is Ina's Grove?
On Duff.
So it's if you follow Duff when it turns kind of more into a residential area.
Way up north, right before Northwood School, right before the mall. Duff is one of those winding roads that kind of takes you all through Ames. But, yeah, it is close to a residential area. And actually, if you were going to Homewood Golf Course and you just kept going north, you would actually run into Ina's Grove. It's a larger community park, and this park master plan will help sort of shape its future. So again, 6 to 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, May 11th at the Ames Public Library, and the community is welcome to attend if you want to give your input, but you're not able to attend. From May 12th to 17th, on the city website, there will be an online survey. So May 12th to 17th, they'll have a survey to fill out for people who have specific input on Ina's Grove. And you can find that either at cityofames.org or directly on the Parks and Rec homepage at amesparkrec.org. So two ways to fill that out. Again, May 12th through 17th. The big event coming up that people continue to call us about is Yard Waste Free Day. So if you have your yard waste all bagged up and ready to go, or like me, if you're still collecting it every weekend, remember May 13th, Saturday, May 13th is our one and only spring yard waste free day. And that is at a new site. So if you've been in Ames for a while, you may remember that we had a site on Friel Drive in East Ames. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the original sites for Yard Waste Free Day. We're back in that area. We're now at 400 Friel Drive, and to access that site, we're asking that you go down South Dayton and enter off Southeast 5th Street. So you go in off Southeast 5th Street and you exit onto Lincoln Way. Mm-hmm. It would be East Lincoln Way.
A stupid question, but in spring, what is yard waste?
Well, it's a lot of what's left over from fall.
Oh. So it's just cleaning things up.
I have a lot of leaves and twigs and debris. We will take brush. Mm-hmm. You know, as you clean out your beds or your yard, grass clippings that have kind of just laid over the winter, you'd be surprised. I probably get as much stuff in the spring as I get in the fall. But this is a great opportunity to go ahead and get rid of that stuff.
So is this something that you can put out to be picked up, or you bring it yourself to the...
Well, obviously, if you've made arrangements with your waste hauler, you can set it curbside. But this and there's typically a fee associated with that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to transport your yard waste to the site, this is when you can drop it off at no cost. It is yard waste, including brush, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. At the new site, 400 Friel Drive. And it's important to remember that site address, 400 Friel Drive, because in the fall, it will probably be at that site as well. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the site for at least this year. And again, we remind people you cannot put yard waste in your garbage. You need to separate it. And this way it is composted and reused, and that's always a good thing.
Can you describe exactly where Friel Drive is?
So if you're going out on Lincoln Way, the way that I remember it is that you go right past the resource recovery plant. And you just keep going, but you don't go as you'd go all the way to Dayton, but you're then coming back. So you go the way out East Lincoln Way to Dayton, head south, and then come south on Dayton, and then come back in through Southeast 5th Street.
So it's before you hit I-35.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll have a lot of participation there. I know it's just one Saturday, and sometimes people can't make it. Spring has always been one day and the fall is always four. So there is a difference. It's been established that way and budgeted that way for years. And I do know that residents do appreciate it. I know that I often think they wish there were more in the spring or the fall, but we have five budgeted each year, and there is that opportunity at no cost to drop your yard waste. So. Another event for your calendar, if you're a bicyclist, this May is Bike Month. It's sort of a celebration of biking and becoming an active cyclist. Bike to Work Week kicks off May 15th and goes through the 19th. And the City Hall will again be the kickoff breakfast on Monday, May 15th for Bike to Work Week. So if you bike to work that week, every day you can stop somewhere and get breakfast.
Oh, how nice.
It is great. We got involved in this a couple of years ago, and the mayor and council host Bike to Work Week at the breakfast at City Hall. So we will be there from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. in front of City Hall, giving out bagels and yogurt, juices and milk to bikers who stop by. And it has been a really fun event to mm-hmm. be part of, because it's amazing how many people are commuting mm-hmm. to work, and not just adults. We see kids as well who are commuting to school via bike, and they seem to really enjoy the breakfast and the social aspect of it and the chatting. We have had we're kind of going 50-50 between having to move it inside and being outside. We had a beautiful, beautiful morning last year, and so I'm optimistic that we'll have some good weather this year. It's a little brisk still in the morning, particularly on a bike. You have to kind of prepare for that wind and dress in layers. But the bikers really, really talk about the benefits of biking, and every year I say I'm going to do it, and I haven't yet, but one of these years I will get on my bike and make it to Bike to Work, one of the breakfasts.
So the breakfast at City Hall is when again?
7 to 9 a.m., Monday, May 15th, in okay. front of City Hall.
And where can we find a schedule of where the other breakfasts are?
So the best place to go, we do this in collaboration with the Ames Bike Coalition, and they have a very active Facebook page. So if mm-hmm. you go look at the Ames Bicycle Coalition on Facebook, you can find the schedule of events. And there's a lot of things going on all month to celebrate biking and bike safety. Mm-hmm. There's bike rodeos. There's these Bike to Work Week breakfasts. There's arranged bike rides for kids. There's bike rides for adults. And there's, of course, you know, mixed ones. I think Ames is really kind of coming together as a biking community, a lot more interest in bike-friendly streets and multimodal transportation. And we're starting to see that interest in – I notice a lot more year-round bike commuters. I don't know if you've noticed – more people in the winter are biking, mm-hmm. and yeah. I really have a lot of respect for those people, because I think it takes a commitment, and they really talk about how once you get started, it just really becomes a part of your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's awesome, and I hope to see a lot of people again, 7 to 9 a.m. on Monday, May 15th, in front of City Hall at our breakfast. Well, let's see. What else? Oh, so we have a new water plant coming online. I don't know if you've been past our site on 13th Street.
I have, yes. It's impressive. It's very big.
It sort of kind of grew up out of the horizon.
A big mushroom.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So that has been going on. The construction on our new water plant has been going on now for this fall. Would have been 2 years. We will be done before then, but it's been a long time in coming. And now we're to the point where we're doing some testing. So the water plant, the inside, the mechanical components of them, of water production, are ready for testing. So we're starting to do some testing on the new system. And just an FYI to residents, when we start to test the new system, it can cause rusty water in the area, particularly along 13th Street and even throughout the city. What happens is that you start stirring up some of the naturally occurring minerals in the water, and you might see that in your home as rusty water or discolored water. Again, it's not dangerous. Not dangerous to drink. Rusty water can stain your clothes or even dishes, apparently, if you use it for washing. So what you want to do is avoid, if you notice rusty water, you want to avoid pulling that into your water heater. So just run your cold taps for a while until it clears. It can take a minute or two. Just run them, clear that rust out, and then you'll be okay. If you've already done your laundry and you realize, uh-oh, I got some rust in there, don't dry it. Keep the laundry wet, and we have rust remover tablets. You just throw it in and run the laundry again, and mm-hmm. it should take that rust out.
And where do the rust remover tablets come from?
You can get rust remover tablets free of charge at City Hall, at the information desk, at all fire stations, or you can call the water plant at 239-5150. That 239-5150 is a number that is answered 24 hours because there's always somebody at the water plant. But if you don't live next to a fire station or city hall, call the water plant for information on how to get those tablets and throw them in your wash. The important thing is don't dry your laundry. I had this happen to me, not in Ames, where I ran laundry and didn't notice that there had been rust in the water and have this sort of weird tie-dyed look to your clothes where these orange rings sort of start showing up. So you probably don't want that. Anyways, starting to test the infrastructure, hoping to have that transition in the next few months from the existing water plant, which is down by the power plant downtown, to the new facility on East 13th Street. And just to mark your calendars, I don't have a lot of details, but we are planning an open house and ribbon cutting on Saturday, August 26th. For the new water plant, people will be able to go on tours, look around the new facility. That date is set. So very, very exciting. Another thing that's gathered a lot of attention recently is we released some information about using goats at Ada Hayden to do some invasive weed control. And that has caught a lot of people's eyes. It's kind of it's not necessarily – I know other communities have been doing it for a while. It's not necessarily new, but it is new to us. On Saturday, May 13th, also the day of Yard Waste Free Day, that'll be the start of bringing in some goats. We're going to bring them into a certain part of Ada Hayden, and it's not the city that's doing it. We're contracting with a vendor that does use – brings goats on site for invasive weed control. We'll bring 40 goats into a part of South Ada Hayden Heritage Park, and they will be grazing on non-native vegetation, which are things like honeysuckle, poison ivy, buckthorn, and clearing that area naturally of those. We don't have to use chemicals on there to get rid of those non-wanted species. The goats will be fenced. It will be an electric fence, so don't touch it. But you can come and watch them. And the goats will be there between 3 and 7 days, I guess, depending on how hungry they are.
So if you're going for a walk at Ada Hayden and you see a bunch of goats, you are not hallucinating.
Yeah, they're up there. So it's kind of be kind of fun to watch that.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Any last words, Susan?
Just a reminder that there have been a lot of improvements at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. Memorial Day is coming up. So sort of keep that in your thoughts. You might want to, if you needed to do some landscaping work, we have more water spigots available. And we're just doing some general improvements to the road and the service drive. So hopefully you'll notice those improvements because they really do look nice.
Okay. Thank you, Susan Guiazda. And I've been your host for the past hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Earlier in the show, we heard from Art Mann, Jason Karimi, and Cindy Blythe. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And as always, our engineer is Evan Taylor. Thank you, Evan. Remember that Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org, so if there's anything you want to go back to hear again, you can find it there at khoifm.org. We're also streaming live online at khoifm.org, so tell your friends if they're from out of town. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., and you can also hear it on the homepage of our website with links to the information we've given to you in the program. Local Talk is a radio production workshop. If you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you and you can be part of our team. Please remember that we are still in our membership drive for spring. We have a matching grant of $15,000, and we are just approaching $10,000. So we would love to pick up that last $5,000 that would then turn into $10,000 magically with the matching fund. So please remember KHOI. Please join us. The phone number to join is 515-292-2878, or you can just go online to khoifm.org. Click on the donate button. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.